live stream, we will get to them for you guys. Hello, Anik. Thank you. Thank you. Love from Canada back to India. Brazil. That is awesome, guys. We got people from all over the world joining in. Great lighting. How?
We got
really simple. One light there and then one light there, just
and our white wall.
And our and yeah. Our,
you don't need you don't need a studio for it. Here's your setup. One light. There's our kitchen and a white back.
You have one light more than I do. I just have, you know, windows.
Nice.
Nice natural
windows. Windows work also. Free. They're free.
Yeah, exactly. We were like that too, and then we're like, hey, we're gonna be doing this all the time, so might as well make it a little bit more professional, right?
All right. Well, you know what? Let's just jump right into it. I feel like we got a nice crowd here. So guys, welcome to Filmmakers Uncut. On this podcast / live stream series, our goal is to really dive into the minds of some amazing cinematographers, directors, DPs, just a bunch of different people in the film industry, and really explore, you know, how they became successful. So, and you know, just to hear from them, you know, hear their stories. What troubles did they go through? What are they experiencing now in the COVID pandemic? If you guys want to ask those questions, again, just leave them below in the comment section or in the little question mark box that you'll see in the comments, and we'll answer them at the end of the podcast. But Steve, thank you so much for joining today.
Glad to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. Do you mind giving us a brief introduction yourself and talk a little bit about what you do here? We've got a couple of your fans already joining. You're getting a lot of love from some people here.
Awesome, awesome. I'm a New York City-based director, DP, and used to be a still photographer mostly, but now it's all, I shoot food and beverage work, mostly for big brands like Pepsi and Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and those kinds of places. We use incredible amounts of technology in the work that we do. We have a lot of robots and we have all sorts of crazy rigs and things we create to help us tell these stories in really interesting and dynamic ways. I went to photography school, but I've learned by myself all the video stuff and all the technical stuff and engineering stuff. So it's really challenging and it's been fun though. It's been a fun journey.
That's awesome. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because it's kind of like a common trend now. Like a lot of people went to school for film or video production, but we're seeing like an increase of people who kind of just learn themselves. How did you get into, you know, film from photography, and what was your kind of your journey to where you are now?
I did still photography for a long period of time. So I went, you know, I graduated college, I moved to New York City, I assisted photographers, you know, this was when people still shot film for a couple years. And then, you know, I started my own studio. I was able to get clients to hire me to do still photography, and figured out, because there's three sides to what I do. I always break it down as like there's the creative, there's the technical, and then there's the business. You know, so like you really need to be good at all three of those to be successful running a business doing creative things, basically. So, you know, after I kind of got into still photography, got clients, you know, had my studio going, I kind of got bored of that, and I started just taking as a hobby, basically taking classes and like, oh, I want to learn how to weld and how to do woodworking and how to do plastics and epoxy molding and all this stuff. That I found a place here in Brooklyn that taught these kind of classes, and it was like at night and on weekends. So this is just my hobby. Like photography was my job. You know, I always say like once you're hobby becomes your job, you need a new hobby. I started doing all these random classes, and then I kind of reached a point where I was like, still photography, I saw more and more clients wanted video and they wanted things moving. But like stop motion, I don't have the patience for stop motion. I'm more of a, let's make the whole thing happen in a half a second and shoot in slow motion kind of guy. I started, you know, just I got a video camera, rented a Red camera, and used it for like a week. And I was just like, let me just play around and use window light, whatever lights I had. And I just started like learning how video worked. And then like, oh, I had a friend that was an editor, and she's like, oh, let me help you learn how to edit it. And you know, it was a multi-year process, just understanding video, never mind bringing it to where I am now. So, you know, after a year or two of futzing around with basic video, I was like, okay, it's time. I have a clear understanding of why I was put on this earth, and it was to be a visual engineer, as I call it. So it's bringing my engineering knowledge together with, and my love for engineering together with my, you know, artistic creative side, telling stories through photography. So I started doing, you know, the work that I basically do now, which is, you know, kind of doing really crazy engineering to make amazing stories. And that's where the visual engineering title kind of came from. And I did this one video that really kind of changed everything for me, which was the burger drop or burger deconstructed. If you Google that, you'll definitely find me, where I wanted to show what I meant by visual engineering. So I kind of did it as a test where I was just like, I wanted this burger to like see all the layers and then magically see it land and then put a beer down next to it. And I did that as just a test, you know, like luckily I was making money from still photography enough to pay like a small team to help me do that. And that was the first time ever using a Phantom, first time ever using a robot, like first time doing a lot of things. But to my surprise, I shared the behind the scenes to it and it went super viral. And here I am today.
That's an awesome story. Before we move forward, I think there's a bit of an audio problem that we just want to try to take care of.
I think it is on your side, but it's internet. So I think we're just going to keep going and hopefully the internet rolls back. I don't think there's much we can do.
Okay. Hopefully, yeah, they hear me okay.
Yeah, for anyone who really wants to watch this later, we are recording this and you can find this entire podcast/live stream on our YouTube channel later. And it's also going to be in our story for the next 24 hours. So if you guys miss anything really important, you guys can always come back and watch it. Steve, great story. Honestly, yeah, there are so many things that you touched upon that I kind of want to address, but we'll talk about them one at a time so we don't get a little bit too mixed up. But I thought it was really interesting how you went from still photography, you know, you just picked up a Red camera, started messing around, and then slowly created a career out of that. Were you scared at all making that transition?
You know, there was a financial scariness moment. That money freaks me out, but I'm not scared of like creative failure. I gave that up a long time ago. Like, I think you can't be scared of taking a risk. Like if you believe it in like your gut that this is like what you want to do and you believe in, then you got to see that path through and give it a try. But there was definitely a point where like, oh, my still photography clients I stopped working for them and I hadn't yet started working for video clients yet. So there was this kind of like, in between, and I had a studio and I had a full-time employee and I had a wife and a house and a daughter, and those pressures are definitely scary,
100%. Yeah, I think we kind of experienced the same thing, because when we started our production company, as you mentioned, there's a lot of pressure, and especially the finances, you know, you could be completely throwing away a stable career to follow your passion, and you don't never know how it's going to go. If you could go back and, you know, talk to yourself, what's something that you would tell yourself just for like, you know, followers or for yourself and people who might be watching and listening to this right now, who might be experiencing that, you know, what's something that you would tell them to help them take that risk to jump into it?
Just about risk in general or about when I switch from stills to video?
Just in general, like making that decision, you know, whatever it might be, like if you're scared for whatever reason, pressure, family, finances, what would you tell somebody to pursue their career, their dream, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, I would say to anybody out there, whatever you do, whether it's photography, film, you know, whatever it could be, is to believe in what you're going to do. Like, do whatever you do with passion, do whatever you do with persistence, do whatever you do, you know, 110%. And I think so many people teeter on the like 50% commitment to what they want to do, and then they never really get anywhere. And I think that's the big decision like that you have to make is like, am I really going to do this or am I not really going to do this? You know, like I think, mm-hmm. you know, and that is the scary part of failure, to make sure you have some sort of a backup plan if that doesn't work out. You know, don't invest all your time in the backup plan. Just make sure like, okay, hey, if I put all my money into this and I try to do this for the next 6 months or a year and things don't work out, you know, what's the worst case scenario? You know, what will be the place that is it moving back in with my parents, or is it, you know, whatever that might be, or is it just like, oh, maybe I just didn't do well, but I'm still fine. You know, like, and if that's your case, which is a lot of people like have a full-time job and they're going to start trying to do this on the side, which I think is the best way to do it. Cause this like transitioning a career could take a long time. I mean, it's not months, it's not weeks, it's years most likely, you know? So like, if you could do it while you still have income on the side at night, on the weekends, whatever it is, I would definitely say that, you know, and that's how I did it. Basically, I was working as a still photographer while I transitioned to being a director of DP. So, you know, like I didn't, there was that in between, which eventually you had to cut one off to go the other way. But I think, and you really hold yourself accountable too. I think it would be the other advice I give people is like, oh, I said by June, I'm going to do this. Well, if it's July and you haven't done it yet, well, get it done. You know, forget that July 4th weekend vacation and like just get it done. You know, I think it's really important for people to hold themselves accountable to deadlines and to goals, knowing that they're fluid, but at least try to give yourself, you know, marks to hit, you know.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I kind of wanted to ask you, because I know you're in a very niche business right now. And I thought it was very interesting. I'm not sure if it was just passion that got you in there, but did you have any thinking process before that, before going into such a niche environment?
You know, I believed in it so much, like that this is what I should be doing, that it's just like, I'm going to do that. I mean, I'm also very unique in that way, where my wife drives her crazy because we're total opposites. Like she'll think about what she wants to do for like months and maybe never actually do it. I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. Let me do it like right now. And I think I'm like, let me look up a YouTube tutorial. Let me look up this. Let me go call my friend that has a camera. Let's like, here we go. Like life is short. Right. And I think, you know, too many people spend more time thinking about what they want to do than actually just starting somewhere and starting to do it. And I think it's really important for people just like realize like you're not going to do the perfect Hollywood film the first time out, right? But like get one take that you like, get one, you know, 2 second clip that you like, whatever it is, like make sure you know, get some of those things just going. Like realize it's going to take you a while to get there and kind of embrace that and realize that you know, it's a challenge, but like the sooner you start chipping away, like at the very bottom of the big mountain of things that you need to do to accomplish what you want to do, the sooner you're going to get there, right? If you just keep staring at the mountain and be like, is that the mountain I want to climb? I don't know. You know, like you're never going to climb the mountain. So for me, I think that's a big important step for people. And sometimes it's a mental block of like, oh, I can't do it until I have the red camera and the Phantom and the whatever, and like all the tools that, you know, it's just like, no, you have a phone that has a camera on it. Use that until you get to the next level, you know? And that's how I built my career. It was like, I started with a simple camera and then, okay, I got hired to do something that I could do with a simple camera. Then I used that money to buy a light. And then I used the light and the camera to make the next job. And then I used that money to buy the next job. You know, like it's a long process and it's years in the making. You know, I always say it as it's like being in this business, especially is like planting seeds to grow trees, right? So you got to start planting the seed and then you're going to have to water it for months, years, month, weeks, who knows, depending on the kind of plant it is, right? And you got to keep watering it year after year, month after month, and eventually it'll fruit and you'll get a job from that tree. But I guarantee you, if you stop watering that tree, you're never going to get the things you want, you know? So it's kind of that idea of like, it's a long, consistent path to get there, not just a quick, like, I really want to do this. And like, it's going to magically happen overnight, you know? And I think the younger generations are like immediate in what they're used to, like, oh, I need this thing, I'll get it on Amazon like tomorrow, you know, like and realize that the world isn't like that. You know, like you could get things like that, but the true accomplishments take a long time. And, you know, going back to the tree analogy, like there's some seeds I've started watering 20 years ago that I'm still waiting to fruit, but that tree is getting real big. And when it does fruit, it's going to be really big, you know? So realize that it's a process, you know?
Right. Very well said. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people get in the industry and they're like, hey, I'm going to go work with this, or they expect that they're going to be working with like this huge brand within like a year of time. Right. Not knowing that the people working with these brands have been building their portfolio and their skill for, you know, 10 plus years. Right. And even more sometimes. So that is super important. And I love the point you made there. Hard work does pay off at the end of the day. I wanted to ask, I know you have a lot of gear right now, and a lot of big gear too, and expensive gear. How did you end up coming upon all of this? Do you rent most of them, depending on the project, or do you own all of them?
We own a lot. We just moved from Manhattan to Brooklyn to our new studio. If those that follow me, you've seen all my stories, and we have a lot of shit that we had to move. And literally, like, it's like one job paid for the thing, and then I got the next thing, and I got the next thing. It's literally a years and years in the making of collecting stuff. I'm a big fan of renting something one or two times at least before you buy it, or make sure, like as an example, like the Phantom camera. To me, when I started out, I was like, how am I ever going to buy this $100,000 camera? Like, there's no way, I'm ever going to have a Phantom camera. I cannot fathom $100,000 on a camera. So I started renting it, and I found somebody that would rent it to me, DP that owned it, that he had a Phantom, he had Alexa Mini, he had all this stuff. So when he was on a job not using the Phantom, he would rent it to me on a discount, so that, you know, for as a testing rate, you know, so like instead of, you know, $3,000 a day, it would be like $3,000 for a week. You know, it wasn't free, but it, you know, he still made money and I got to use it. So I did that for months, you know, just in for little bits. Like I would rent it for a week here, and then a few months later I rented for another week there. And trust me, when I had that camera, I was in the studio 24 hours a day. Like, just like, I got this thing. This thing's so expensive. Like, I need to just keep shooting whatever I can throw in front of it. Just like throw salt on the floor or whatever in slow motion.
Right. Losing hundreds an hour.
Seriously. And then eventually I got to the point like, oh, people, like, since I had done that, people started hiring me to do slow motion work because I had it to show, which, you know, and then, oh, now I started renting the Phantom camera from this guy at full rate. And then I was like, oh, wait, now I'm renting it from you 2 or 3 days a month. Oh, for one day of that rental, I could buy the Phantom camera. And so I bought the Phantom camera, you know, and the payment on it over 3 years, like, and actually we made money on the camera every day, because if I rented it more than one day a month, I was now making money on this debt, you know, basically. And then we just last month or 2 months ago finally paid off the Phantom. So, you know, now I can still rent it. So it's just great. But the same formula worked for one lens early on in my career that was $3,000, or, you know, worked on the, you know, $250,000 robot, you know, now, you know, it's like, but make sure you have the demand and you rent or borrow to create the demand, and you only buy it when the demand is there. You know, like, I think too many people are like, I gotta mortgage my house and buy this robot. And it's like, okay, well, you haven't started the demand yet. So it might be 3 years before you see the demand. And now you're just paying for this thing that's sitting there. So I think it's being smart. You know, I think, as I was saying early on, was like the three things, right? I'm good at creative, technical, and business. You have to be good at all three to really search, to strive and survive, and leverage your strengths. If you're a really good business person or really good at marketing, then use that, but also don't ignore the other two. Like, make sure you're also attacking your weaknesses as well.
100%. Out of curiosity, do you have like a favorite piece of equipment right now? Like, whether it's a camera, a lens, you know, one of the bolt action robots, or what is your favorite? Can you geek out about it?
My new favorite is the Bolt X on Track. It is also the most scary. So it's the robot. It has a 10-foot reach, and then it's on a track that could be as long as like 80 feet long. So it can move, and it can move camera speed as high as like 30 miles per hour. So imagine your camera running around a studio at 30 miles per hour. It is really scary, but awesome. The possibilities of what we're going to do with this robot. We just got it like 2 weeks ago. So it's my favorite peek out moment thing.
That's great. I guess we'll get a chance to see a lot more BTS of you guys using that. Any horror stories or like funny stories, you know, on set? You guys are flinging food and spices all over the place, right?
There's some incidents that we're not excited about. Recently, our 100 millimeter macro lens drank some Pepsi. And apparently lenses don't like drinking Pepsi. Where it was the last shot of the day, and we had Pepsi in the tank in a clear plexi tank, and we're shooting from underneath it, and the stand slipped, like the Cardellini that was holding it slipped, and the little report, the Pepsi straight into the lens with the Phantom camera right underneath it. And yeah, needless to say, we had to replace the lens. Luckily the Phantom was fine. But that we've also had the robot smash a set once, and the important thing is you learn from these experiences. In the middle of the robot, like the operator made a mistake and clicked just one wrong button, and then you went to run it, and the whole thing just went robot smash, and basically move the Phantom right. It is terrifying. Yes,
right. That's when you might get a lot of insurance, right?
With great power, there's great responsibility, you know. But with that, like, you got to pivot. Like, that's the other thing about right now is like, COVID happens, you pivot. You know, the camera smashes through the set midway through a shoot, you pivot because the client still wants their shots, right? And luckily, we were able to rebuild it, like, because all the props fell to the floor, and like, you know, luckily we had some extras of stuff, and we were able to like work it out.
Steve, give us 1 second, Steve. We lost you on Instagram. We have you on the live stream.
I'm back. Yeah, sorry.
You're back. Yeah. If you want to just reverse 30 seconds, because that was an awesome point you just made.
Sure. No, I say you always have to pivot, basically, like whether it's COVID, whether it's the camera smashed the set or the Pepsi poured into your camera, whatever it is. So we had another camera, not a Phantom camera. We had a red camera that we were to put on there. We had another lens we were able to use. And we were able to rebuild the set and keep moving because the client wants their shots. Like, you can't say, oh, sorry, your camera broke. Like, good luck, you know.
Yeah, she's canceled.
You never want to get hired again, right? So the reality of this world is you constantly have to pivot, you know. So with that, you know, whether it's COVID where, you know, suddenly like, okay, we can't hire a full crew. Can we do it with 2 people, 3 people, 4 people? What's the minimum we could do? And can we have people remote, like directing things and whatever it is. And in the business that we're in too, like, you know, we didn't expect COVID, but you have to find a way to keep moving, you know, and we actually pivoted into shooting the Garage Learning, which is our online platform that officially launches in June that we did a Kickstarter for. So we were like, okay, I'm like, look, every shoot's gonna be canceled. I see this COVID thing coming. Like, I don't know if it's a month or weeks or whatever it was, but I was like, I know we can't take camera gear home, and everybody in my team, we just started shooting videos for YouTube on like how to do the work that we do because it's something we wanted to do anyway. So it, like, you pivot, you know. So I think that's something to consider. Like, I'm literally pivoting every day of my life. You know, like yesterday we did a jewelry shoot in here for the first time in our new studio, and we realized that the floor in our studio here has some vibration in it. When we were like 1-to-1 macro and some like diamonds that were like that big, you know, little tiny little diamonds, and you could see just vibration happening. And we're like, shit, what do we do? And it's just like, okay, we put some rubber pads on things, and we sat and we did multiple passes on the shots, and we were able to like composite it and do track, you know, stabilization, and it works. It changed our shutter angle, and you know, like you have to be really good at that. And you know, if you aren't, then it's a challenge for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think anyone else could have said it better. That was a great example of, you know, how to be practical, especially in an ever-changing world. I kind of want to touch upon the company side, you know, the business side, because you're talking about having all three of these aspects that, you know, made you such a great director/filmmaker. And I wanted to talk about the company side. So, you know, when you started your company, was it just you? Did you have a partner? And just yourself? That's incredible. And when did you start realizing you needed to bring more people on? And who was the first person you brought on and why?
Yeah, so, you know, I started as a still photographer, so life's a little easier just doing stills. And most still photographers are just themselves for the most part. You know? So it was pretty soon though. Like once I kind of had steady clients, which was like about 3 years or so, I brought on one like freelance person that helped me regularly, like even not on shoot days. Like on shoot days, I would always have an assistant, just one assistant that I would hire along with a stylist or whatever I needed for the shoot. And then after a couple of years, I'm like, I need somebody to like all the time. Like I can't handle the workload as far as doing the billing and the bookkeeping and the, you know, all the back end stuff of like coordinating deliveries with the client and all the stuff. Cause I'm like, I'm on a shoot, so I can't be doing those things. So
we're going to need another time out here.
Yeah, keeps going to sleep. Yeah. Sorry. I don't know why my phone.
And we're back.
Yeah. Sorry guys. So yeah. Oh, there it is. Instagram really wants to go to sleep today. I'll keep touching it so it doesn't do that. But yeah, I was saying, as a still photographer, I started out with just me, and then I added one person full time. And for many, many years, that's all it was. It was just me and one other person. And then as I started getting into video, things changed and I needed more help. So, you know, and it comes down to that. Like there's X amount of things that have to be done in a day. And if I can't do them, who's going to do them? You know, and a client, you can't drop a ball, right? If you're like juggling, you know, and like, oh, I have another ball I could juggle. I can't do it. I need somebody else to juggle that ball for me. So, you know, and I think a lot of people are really bad at knowing when to bring on help because it's always like same thing with the phantom camera purchasing. Like I could never afford that. It's like now we have 12 employees here. And I mean, a big chunk of that was just this year with the Garage Learning launching. But once I started doing video and I'm doing all these special effects stuff, like, wait, am I the director or am I the guy building the thing in the workshop? Like I didn't have time to be both. So Matt Huber, who's our rigging person now, he became that person for me. So I brought, that was my third hire, you know, and then from there it's like, oh, I need somebody that could do, you know, the bookkeeping and all that stuff, that because my bookkeeper was now my producer and they were doing all the calls and the Zooms and the thing and the, you know, the bidding and all that stuff. And I need somebody else to do like the studio manager role. So then we brought on a freelance, you know, like a part-time studio manager. And then we got the robots. I needed a robot person. And it's I started everything always myself doing the job, which I'm really glad that I know what goes into each of the jobs of the people I've hired. But then at some point you just hire a specialist to do that thing for me, you know? So like, you know, that's like when we're hiring somebody, it's always somebody that has a very special skill that we need, you know, that I don't have the time to do also, you know? So, you know, and it's a process and it's scary sometimes because, you know, now when you have all these full-time employees, like what happens if work gets slow and then, you know, yeah, it could get challenging, but that's why you only bring them on when you know that that'll free you up to be more productive. As you know, basically the best place for me to be is doing creative things. You know, like I should be the director, the storyteller, the one leading the vision of the company, like the CEO for better work, lack of better word. I shouldn't be doing the IT work in the, you know, server closet or whatever. I know how to do it. I've been doing it for years, but eventually you need an IT person, you know? So that's like where I think it, you have to look at what you're spending your time on every day and is it the best use of your time?
For sure. There was a great comment by OAV Production. I'm not sure if they're a friend of yours, but they were just talking about like not spreading yourself too thin. And, you know, when you are doing like a very important project, you know, it's hard to pay attention to all these things. And it's so useful just having a second pair of eyes to focus on one specific thing or another person focusing on another thing. It's so helpful and so useful. So, yeah, 100%. I did have another question and I totally forgot.
I can hop in.
I'll think about it. Yeah, Poi, if you want to hop in.
Yeah, for sure. Since we're on the topic of business, I know a lot of people coming into the industry usually want to work at like a big production company. So my question to you is, how do you keep your employees motivated, especially starting off? Because, you know, when you're bringing someone into a company that only has three people or two people working at it, sometimes it's hard for the workers to stay motivated because there's not a team aspect yet, a big team aspect yet. So how do you keep your employees motivated during those times?
You know, I feel like it's never been hard for me for whatever reason, because we're just doing really cool. Like, my goal in life is to do really cool shit. And whether it was one person or two people or three people, we're all this all on board of the idea that, like, we want to be here. And it also comes into hiring the right people too. Like, you want people that are self-motivated, that want to be there, either they're getting paid or not, or whatever it is. Like, that's what I look for, is other people that have that passion and will put all their energy in and be here on a weekend if they need to get a project done, because they believe in the project as a whole. And I think for people, when you work for somebody else, you should put that kind of energy into the people that you work for too, because I think, you know, they'll realize it, and it's good practice to realize, like, it is always a team effort, whether it's one person or 100 people, and you want to make sure everybody's on the same team and has the same excitement for what they're doing. So I would definitely say, make sure you're leading by example. You know, that's a huge thing I do. I'm the first one here, maybe the last person to leave a lot of days. I'm not too big to like mop the floor if it needs to be mopped, or whatever it is you have to do. Like, never forget your roots and where you came from. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you should lead by example. And if you're not a good leader, then yeah, they're not going to be motivated. You have to work really hard to motivate them. But I think if you are leading by, hey, look, my drive and my passion for doing what I do is so evident to people that they want a part of that. They want to be involved in that, you know? And I think that's the best thing you could do.
Mm-hmm. Since we're on this topic, it's funny because your question was so close to my question that it reminded me of what I was going to ask earlier. I wanted to talk to you about interns, because I'm sure as running a company, you get emails all the time, right? Like, people wanting to intern, they're sending you their portfolios, they're asking you if they can work for free, if they can fill out these forms. Do you have any advice for, you know, people who might be looking for internship, not specifically with you, but just going out, trying to get their foot in the door in general? What advice do you have to some of the people listening right now?
I would say, don't send generic messages. You know, do your research. Number one, do your research. Like, let's say I'm going to use myself as an example because it's easy, right? Like, look at my work, look at my website, look at my Instagram, Google me on YouTube, whatever, you know, like, look me up and do the research. And when you email me, you know, say, oh my God, I love this blah, blah, blah thing that you shot, Burger Drop, whatever it is. Like, I thought that was so cool. And why? Why do you think it was so cool? Because a lot of people could just look up something and say, oh, I thought that was cool. Like, no, I like that you used robotics and this is so interesting. I would love to learn more about that, because that shows me that you're really interested in this position, because I get 100 intern emails a month. You know, like, I want only the one that's the most excited to be here and has, like, is willing to put that effort and time in. So that's number one. Two, show me a bit of your personality, you know, because, like, once again, we also want to be around people that are, we like being around, you know, like, we don't want to just an intern that doesn't mesh with us as a person, you know. So I think whether it's a little out there or not, like, just show me who you are. Like, even if you're, you know, a little more alternative, whatever it is, whatever, and tell me a little bit about what you're passionate about. Like, what are you trying to accomplish? Like, why, and you know, why working for me might help you get to something that you really want to do in your life. Not just like, oh, this guy's work is cool, I want to work for them. It's like, no, but why? What do you want to do? Like, because if I take on an intern, like, I want to make sure we're giving back to the intern as much as they're giving to us. And that's the relationship I'm looking for, is somebody that is going to be useful here, not just like a fly on the wall that's like sucking information from us, but somebody that's also has a skill to offer us. And usually with that, it's like, oh, I'm really into 3D and Maya or whatever. I'm into motion capture, or I'm, you know, like, I took a class in this I'm super excited about, or I have a YouTube channel where I do this. Like, share a bit about you, but make sure you start by talking about me. So whoever that is, like, it's just,
yeah, like, no, it makes sense,
you know, because whatever, I get generic things all the time, and it's just like, I'm not even going to read this. I'm not even going to get past the first sentence, you know, unless right away you tell me, you know, a bit like, make it real, you know, make it personal, you know.
Right. I see a lot of people leaving questions on Instagram, guys. If you want your questions answered, we're going to do a Q&A at the end. Just make sure to go to the bottom. There's a question mark there. You can leave your question in there and we'll read it later. Steve, a question on my end that I think is super important too for maybe a little bit more advanced people is, how are you getting the big clients? What are you doing differently? And what people can do differently to be able to capture these types of clients?
Like, so the question is like, how do I get the big clients, kind of, basically?
Okay. Exactly, yeah. How do you get in with the big boys?
Get little clients first. Get a lot of little clients first.
right.
No, I mean, like, the big clients are going to not, they're not going to hire you until you've proven yourself dramatically over and over and over. Like, they're not going to give you a $200,000 a day job, you know, production-wise, until they've seen you do a whole bunch of $20,000 a day ones and a whole bunch of $2,000 a day ones. Like realize it's like, it's a trust building exercise, and just having, you know, five cool videos you've done on your website or your Instagram doesn't make you an expert, you know? So like, you know, I'm now at this point competing on a global stage, right? It's like me competing against like the Marmalade in Germany or against, you know, MacGuffin Films in Manhattan, whatever it is. But originally I was competing just against other still photographers in my neighborhood or whatever, you know, like realize that you got to start competing locally first and get ahead of those people before you have any chance of the people across the country, across the world, you know, whatever that is. So I think it's, you know, it like in still photography, it was easy. Like most people started in what was called editorial, which is magazines, right? You weren't going to get paid much at all, maybe $500 a day, you know, whatever it is, but you got put in a magazine and you had all these tear sheets you built up over years. And then from that, like the advertising people were like, oh, look at all that cool work. Let's hire them to do an ad and we'll pay them way more. And then you have a bunch of ads in your portfolio after years, then like you get the bigger ad, you know, like you realize it's this. It's not, you know, like you're not going to go from A to Z overnight, you know, like it's years in the making. And not giving up, honestly. Like I remember when I moved to New York and I started assisting, they're like, oh yeah, the most successful photographers are the ones that just never gave up. You know, like, because if you're the guy that has 20 years experience, you have a heads up on all the other people that only have 5 years experience. You know, they might, you know, have a better creative mind or something, but the client usually goes with the person that has the most experience or has the biggest reel or, you know, like whatever it is. And it's not just that, but also refine your, I'm trying to find the best way of saying this, like refine your process and how you tell like the story too. Like as an example, like when we get asked to bid a job, we're usually asked to do a treatment. I don't know if you guys cover treatments at all or have talked about treatments at all, but basically it's a document I create that tells the story of how I'm going to approach this job, let's say for, you know, Coca-Cola. You know, so Coca-Cola is like, we have Coca-Cola, you know, 5.5 calories, whatever it is, you know, like we want to make sure that the number 5 is really big and Coca-Cola is really big and it's really refreshing and delicious. And it's going to be a 30-second commercial on TV. So Steve, how would you approach this? So that's kind of what the treatment does, is it's kind of my pitch, taking in the creative that either came from the brand or from the agency. And I have to create a document that tells the story of how I'm going to tell the Coke, you know, 5.5 calorie drink story, you know? And, you know, with that, like at first I did it myself and like Keynote and like it's like showed some examples of my work and like, oh, it's gonna be an awesome story. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be bold. It's gonna be exciting. And like, but I never showed how it was gonna be exciting or what I meant by what is bold. Like, so then you're like, oh, I need a storyboard artist and I actually have to sketch this idea out and actually have a visual of what I mean by bold. And then, oh wait, my layout doesn't look great. Like I need a graphic designer to make the layout better. You know, so now we have storyboards, you have a good story, you have a good layout. Now my treatment looks like a professional and somebody that's been doing this for a long time. So, you know, it's not just having good stories and having the good business and the technicals and whatever, but it's also knowing how to present yourself really well and how to market yourself really well and how to sell why you're better than the guy next to you with examples. You know, like it's easy to say, oh, I'm so much better than him. Like, are you? I don't know. What's your story for Coca-Cola 5.5? Whatever. You know, like, and I think it's easy for people to say big words like, oh, this would be great or awesome or, you know, appetizing or whatever. But I think the real details and the details of like, how are you going to make it that? How is it? And how everyone's so different. Like, I'm going to tell a story so different than anybody else, you know? And that's why people are like, you're giving away all your secrets with, you know, the garage learning and all the stuff we're doing, teaching people. It's like, no, they don't have like how I think of ideas. Like, you know, you could have somebody that has access to all the coolest Hollywood toys, like, but they're not Michael Bay, you know, like it's everybody is different, right? Like you could explode 1,000 things, but it doesn't mean you explode them the same way, you know? But it's just something to realize, and you should be aware of eventually. It takes time to figure this out, like why you're better. You know, like it takes you a while to figure that out. You have to do a ton of work and then see the work you get hired to do more and more and more. It's like, oh, this is the work that people like the most. Maybe that's what I'm better at. And like, why am I better at that? And what makes it better? And can I make that even better and then get more jobs? You know, so it's constantly reevaluating what you do, how you do it, why you do it, and what gets you excited. You know, I think that at the end of the day, the passion, like my passions changed. I was really into, you know, food for a long time. Then I got really into beverage for a long time because like liquids are challenging in so many ways. And then, you know, but product, I'm like, you know, shooting iPhones or whatever, like sound interesting, but they're not as exciting to me as liquids for whatever reason, more chaos in liquids that has to be controlled. But then I get more beverage work. So it's wherever your passion is what people are going to make. It's going to make you stand out from everybody else. So it's like finding that is the most important thing. Like if you know, it's one thing to be a cinematographer, but what else are you? Are you a cinematographer who's passionate about crocheting or something? So maybe you'll make the most interesting crochet videos. You know, like are you a cinematographer who's really big into flying planes? So maybe you could do some awesome aerial stuff because you have a different understanding than just a cinematographer. So I always say it's like your superpower is not cinematography or photography, but it's what else are you into it? You know, like, and that's where with me, engineering is what else I was into and building things and kind of technology. So that's what really unlocked like the client thing, you know, business side for me was like, when I finally put those two things together, it was like, woo, you know, like it really is really empowering. So, and that takes time. I mean, I moved to New York, you know, almost 20 years ago, you know, like, and literally visual engineering just started 5 years ago, you know? So like, to put that in perspective, it took me 15 years to figure out how to then transition over 5 years to do what I do now, you know?
I think if anybody listening to this just came on and heard what you said right there, honestly, I think that was so valuable to anybody in the filmmaking industry or in life in general, right? Like if you own your own business and you're trying to talk to a client, like, you know, how do you sell yourself when you're, you know, going to an interview to get a job? Like, what makes you different? How do you think? Like, I think those were such awesome points. Going off the entire thing about talking about clients and the business thing, I wanted to know if, you know, how do you deal with negative clients? You know, there's been times, I'm sure you've been in those situations too, where like, you know, you create a product, you've been communicating the entire time, the vision seems to be clear, everyone seems to be on the same page, and then, you know, you start shooting, they get a look at it, and, you know, they start saying this and that, things need to change, blah, blah, blah. How do you deal with moments like that?
I think with clients, it's important to be not be the dictator, but be a collaborator. You know, I think they're paying you to do something, which is already amazing. Like they're paying you to do something you like doing, right? Like, oh my God, I get to just shoot food videos for a living. Like, and somebody wants to pay me to do that. That's amazing already. One, and acknowledging that, you know, and then realize that they are the client, and like your job is to make them happy and make sure that you're bringing your creative energy into that and know when to defend a shot and when to pivot and discuss it with them a little more. And I think it's a conversation. It's always like, oh, you don't think it's delicious enough, whatever it is. like, why not? What is it? You know, and it is a communication thing. It's like, why not? Oh, is it maybe just the lighting? Oh, maybe if I just change the light a little bit, or if I change the angle a little bit, oh, that looks so much better. Oh my God, amazing. And they're thankful for that collaboration. I think it takes, you know, I always thought in school when I was in college, like I'm going to graduate and people are going to hire me to be like this creative God. And like, they're going to hire me for my creativity. And I'm like, they do after you've been doing this for like 30 years, you know, like at first you're kind of doing their bidding with a little bit of your own passion in there in your best way possible, but realize like, especially early on, like you're not the diva, you're not James Cameron, you know, whatever it is, like James Cameron wasn't James Cameron 30 years ago. Like it took him a long time before he got trusted to do the big Hollywood videos and all that stuff. So this kind of goes back to the last question a little bit. But as far as like a negative client, you just gotta, you know, smile and wave, you know, like, and just like talk through it and get through the day and realize like after that day, if you don't like that client again, you don't have to work for them again, but you just have to finish out the job that you committed to. And it's up to you then if you ever want to work for them again. But sometimes like some clients that we had a really rough first or second shoot and I'm like, ah, I hate them. And then like, they came back later and like we worked it out. We understood how to work together and what I meant. Cause sometimes communication can be really a real boundary. Like they're saying something, but you need to find your communication language with the client too. Like what they mean by delicious or appetizing versus what I think delicious and appetizing are. And like trying to create a language of what that means. Cause I mean, creatives love to throw big words out there. And part of my challenge is to decipher those words, you know, like what is not impactful enough mean, or what is, it's not bold enough mean? Is it just an angle change? Is it a lighting change? Is it a speed change? Like, what is it? And then sometimes also explaining like, oh, have you thought about this in the edit? Like, this is only going to be 2 seconds and it comes right after this shot. And like, and I think also having your idea really buttoned up helps you as well in those situations where, you know, like you could sell it better to them if you explain it, you know, and a lot of times they're just looking for that explanation from you as to why are we doing it this way versus that way, you know? And I think so many people think a question means they don't like it or they're not going to like it. And it isn't always that. It's just sometimes they just want to know what the purpose is behind a shot, or like, is this shot going to be end up on the editing room floor? Cause like, we don't need this shot. And sometimes they literally correct me, you know, like, you know, also when you're wrong and be like, oh, I didn't think about that. That we don't, maybe we don't need this shot, or maybe the shot should be longer or more important. Like, you know, and I think, you know, that brings me actually to a really important part as far as we haven't really discussed too much is the production side of stuff. We talked about coming up with the creative ideas, but executing them, and how the fact that we always have a pre-pro meeting for every job we do, where we, you know, have a pre-pro book too. So like a pre-pro meeting is basically a meeting where you know, pre-production, which is what it means, where you actually go through what you're going to do in the whole day of shooting, shot by shot, who's the team members that are going to be there. Here's the schedule. We're going to start at 10 a.m. with this shot and 11 a.m. with this shot. Like, so pre-pro meeting is where you, the client, the agency, whatever, whoever's involved, the stylists, go through it and make sure we're all on the same board, all on board with the same thing, so that on the shoot day there's no surprises, because it's a lot easier to pivot ahead of time and like, oh, okay, we're going to redraw the storyboards differently because they don't like it or whatever ahead of time. So then shoot day is just executing, you know, and putting out the small fires that come up here and there where like, oh, the storyboard angle looked better than your real angle, you know, can we make that better? And you know, like, to me, it's become the point that shoot day is almost the easiest day. It's getting to shoot day is the hardest part, you know, and it's because so much has to be pre-thought and so many details have to be worked out. And I think the more buttoned up you can be about your process, the better shoot day is going to go.
That's an awesome answer. Yeah. Communication is basically what you're saying, like all the way through, right? From beginning to end, just openly communicating, putting your ego behind yourself, realizing that, you know, the client is hiring you to recreate their vision, right? They have a product, they have, you know, something that they care about, and they're hiring you to help bring that vision to a reality. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got to put your ego behind and help them achieve something. And, you know, the results will come after you do that. We only have like 10 minutes left because I know we don't want to take too much of your time and we're hitting that 50 minute mark. We don't want to, you know, keep you for the whole day. If you guys have any more questions, hit the question box on the comment section. We're going to answer them as soon as we can. We had an interesting question from somebody. What resources would you recommend for somebody who wants to get into the same field that you're currently in? You know, I know you had the opportunity to kind of like pick up a red camera and fiddle around with it and learn some stuff. But, you know, if you are freelancer and you want to kind of get into slow motion food or slow motion anything, like what kind of resources would you recommend somebody who wants to do what you do?
The number one resource is thegaragelearning.com. you know, to plug myself here a little bit.
And feel free to. You can leave all your plugs anywhere.
We literally built it for this reason. It's for that. I got this question so many times over the years. Like, hey, I'm a 15-year-old in India. I'm a 18-year-old in Germany. I'm a 45-year-old in Pakistan. Whatever it is that I want to do what you do. Oh, my God, it looks so cool. I want to do this. How do I learn it? And there's no clear answer. There's no clear resource because there's the number one thing I say to most people is like, oh, film school. So they go to film school and that's a good start. I went to photography school. So it's, I'm even telling them to do something I didn't do, you know? So, you know, the garage learning is going to be built, you know, with, you know, beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So the beginners, people use their cell phones as their main camera, you know, cause like it's designed for the person that just wants to get their feet wet a little bit and play around. Oh, we lost you on, one of your feeds, not Instagram, the other one. So that's like the number one. And then, you know, with that is, there you go. You're back. You know, the other one is YouTube. You know, like if once again, our content's going to be very specially tailored to what we do, but you know, YouTube is how I learned a lot of stuff or try to find, continuing ed classes in your neighborhood or areas or clubs or groups, like anything. Community is a huge thing. And that's a lot of what we're trying to build with Garage Learning also is a community of people that all want to do the same kind of stuff and they could share their content with each other and like, oh, hey, there's an assignment that Steve gave me on like make a Coca-Cola commercial. And this is my version and share it with other people and get feedback. Cause I think feedback's really important. That's mostly why I think people, I say go to college cause you're put into a more structured place where you're constantly creating work and getting feedback on that work, creating work, feedback, like iteration is how you learn, you know? And I think, that's a really important part of the process, but, I think start with your phone. I mean, that's like if you're like, oh, where do I get started? It's like, your phone does 240 frame a second slow motion. A lot of phones do, which is all a Red camera did. You know, like when I rented the Red camera, like most of the stuff I shot was actually 160, 180 frames per second because iPhones weren't good enough back then, you know, or whatever, you know, Galaxies, whatever kind of camera you like. But realize that like this is amazing times with technology and for not a lot of money, you get started, you know, and the camera's ISOs are way higher. Like back in the day when I started, I had to buy film, get it processed, make prints, scans, whatever it is. Like now the same thing you used to call your mom, you could make a video, you know, like, so I think realize that there's a lot you could do with that. Yeah, no, it might not be the tool you use when you start shooting big jobs or medium jobs, but it's enough to get started and to really get your creative juices going and figure out how you tell stories and what's your storytelling methodology. You know, because I think a lot of people don't know how they tell stories yet. Like, it's just something that they haven't figured out. So I think it's important to just get started with that, you know, and it's in your pocket.
I don't think we could have been, like, such a good answer. We couldn't have been more, because, like, we get that question all the time. Like,
I'm not getting audio from you anymore on the other feed, just so you know.
We can just continue on Instagram. Don't worry about it at all.
Okay.
But yeah, just use your phone, right? Like, phones are insane these days. I remember when I got like my first 4K camera, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago. And then
every single phone out there is 4K. It's absolutely insane. We only have 6 minutes left, so we're going to hit some Q&A. really quickly.
We did already answer a question. We are kind of low on time, so we're just going to end it here. Even though we have a bunch of great questions on here, but aside from that, Steve, if anyone wants to connect with you or find you, and they're hearing this on the podcast as well, where can they find your course and where can they find you?
Yeah, so on Instagram, which many of you are right here right now, so you know where I'm at. So it's at Steve Giralt, G-I-R-A-L-T. Our company is The Garage. So if you Google The Garage TV, which is our production company, thegaragelearning.com is our learning platform. The Garage Rentals is our robot rental, studio rental company. We got companies all over the places, a lot of garages. But yeah, reach out. You could DM me on Instagram. I will eventually respond to you. And yeah, I'm all for answering detailed questions people ask me. Don't be like, how do I do what I do? What do you do? Like, no, I'm not going to be able to DM that to you. You know, like, I think do your research and ask questions specifically about something you're trying to figure out, and I'm happy to answer it. And, you know, The Garage Learning launches in June officially, so you could buy a subscription and you could log into that. And yeah.
Amazing. That sounds amazing. Well, for anyone coming in late or coming in now, you guys can check out the podcast on Filmmakers Uncut. It's pretty much on any streaming platform, so Spotify, Apple, anywhere, Filmmakers Uncut. Aside from that, we're going to be posting this on YouTube as well under Origin Film. So if you guys are coming late, you guys can catch it there. Steve, thank you so much for taking your time. I think you gave so much valuable information that this was a killer episode, my man.
Awesome.
So really appreciate you taking your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys too. All right. And thanks all the fans, everybody all over the world. You know, we'll talk to you. We'll see you soon.
Amazing. Thanks, Steve. Cheers.
All right.
All right. So Steve is just logging
off. I logged off of the Instagram. I'm going to go eat some food, have some lunch. All right. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, Steve. Thank you so much.
Bye.